Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's our special coverage of the runoff debate, sponsored by WNYC and New York One, of the candidates for public advocate, Democrats Letitia James and Daniel Squadron. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. It's moderated by our own Brian Lehrer and New York One's Errol Lewis.
Welcome to a live Democratic primary runoff debate in the race for public advocate. I'm Errol Lewis, and I'm joined in tonight's debate by Brian Lehrer, the host of WNYC's Brian Lehrer Show. Tonight's debate is part of New York's official debate program for the 2013 elections, administered by the city's Campaign Finance Board. The board administers the city's public matching funds program, which is designed to strengthen the role of average New Yorkers and their small dollar donations in city elections. The CFB selects partners to bring the debates to New Yorkers. Tonight's debate is sponsored by New York One News, New York One Noticias, the Citizens Union of the City of New York, the Hispanic Federation, Citizens Committee for New York City, Gothamist, Transportation Alternatives, WNYC, and Time Warner Cable. And for those following us on Twitter, the hashtag we'll be using tonight is hashtag NYC2013. And of course, tonight's debate is being simulcast on WNYC Radio. That's AM 820 and FM 93.9. The next 60 minutes will be an uninterrupted conversation about issues where you'll get a chance to learn more about the two Democratic candidates seeking to become our city's next public advocate. First in line in succession to the mayor, the public advocate is the city's chief ombudsman and can also introduce legislation in the city council. The public advocate also makes appointments to city boards and commissions. And so without further ado, let's introduce the two candidates. They are Letitia James and Daniel Squadron. The candidates will have 1 minute to respond to questions that are asked to them and will also be given the opportunity to respond if they are addressed directly by their opponent. We'll also have what we call a cross-examination, where each candidate will be able to ask his or her opponent a question. And, of course, there will be a lightning round in which candidates will only be allowed to give short answers, usually yes or no, to each question. So with that in mind, we're ready to begin. By the flip of a coin, we determine that Letitia James will get the first question, and that will be asked by Brian.
Thank you, Errol. Ms. James, you know, we've never had a Democratic mayor in the history of the office of the public advocate. So the public advocate has been a natural watchdog like de Blasio on Bloomberg. You've endorsed Bill de Blasio. You'd be running as a ticket with him.
Yes.
So if you're elected and he's elected, convince us that you would really be independent from Mayor Bill de Blasio.
So first, let me thank you for this opportunity and thank all of the sponsors of this great debate so we can discuss the issues relative to the office of New York City Public Advocate. Finally, there's no more tabloid candidates, and so we really can talk about issues that New Yorkers care about. So obviously, as an independent individual, all of my public career, the last 20 years as a former public defender, as a former assistant attorney general, and as counsel in Albany, and 10 years in the city council, I have been independent, independent of a lot of individuals. And there's times when I've stood up to a very powerful interest in the city of New York. And although, you know, I am a very close supporter of Bill de Blasio and a close friend of Bill de Blasio, you know, I'm not afraid to go up against powerful interests, including the mayor of the city of New York, Mayor Bill de Blasio, and would challenge, particularly if he does not keep his promises to New Yorkers, to change the direction of the city after 12 years of a Bloomberg era.
So, Mr. Squadron, have you formally endorsed Mr. de Blasio for mayor?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
And so, same question to you. How do we know you would be independent? And for those New Yorkers who want the public advocate to be maybe first and foremost an independent watchdog on the office of the mayor, why think you would be able to do that better than Ms. James?
Look, it is the core role of the public advocate to stand up to the mayor or the city when you disagree, to stand next to him or her when you agree. In this case, him, I'm sure, will have a Mayor de Blasio. And that is what this is all about. It's what I've done my whole career. I've been a progressive fighter who gets results. I've done it with passing the assault weapons ban into law in the state Senate. I did it against the Bloomberg administration when we beat back some terrible homeless policy. I did it working with the MTA to fix trains across the system. And that's exactly what I'm going to do as public advocate. You know, I have a plan to make the office more effective for children, families, everyday New Yorkers who need more out of City Hall. People who don't have high-powered lobbyists, don't have City Hall on speed dial. And that's what this is all about. And I have to tell you, if I disagree with the mayor as public advocate, I'm going to take him on and we're going to win.
Quick follow-up for both of you.
Yes.
Can you name one policy area where you think you might be the most likely to need to keep the pressure on a Mayor de Blasio?
So the issue for me in the city of New York is someone who has been independent and who has stood up against powerful interests. You know, I am the individual who stood with Bill de Blasio against the mayor of the city of New York who extended term limits. We took it all the way to the Supreme Court. And as you know, my record is clear, standing up to powerful developers who would change the character of communities in the city of New York. And I've consistently fought for affordable housing, not only in my district, but all throughout the city of New York. And I've stood up for children when the mayor wanted to close child care centers. When the mayor wanted to close schools, I took him to court. When the mayor of the city of New York wanted to close our firehouses and cut back on police in the city of New York, I stood up to the mayor.
But there's no one particular policy area where you think, oh, maybe on this one, he might not be as strong as me.
Well, you know, I am an ally of Bill de Blasio, the mayor elect Democratic nominee, and clearly on issues that Bill de Blasio has made commitments to change the direction of the city of New York, I'm going to ensure that he keeps his promises past the Bloomberg era, 12 years of flawed policies in the city of New York, which have left countless number of individuals who are homeless and individuals living in below the poverty level in the city of New York.
And briefly, Mr. Quarkin, can you name one possible policy area?
Well, it's inevitable. You know, public advocate is free of the bureaucracy. And the mayor controls the bureaucracy, whoever that is. And so inevitably, there are going to be times that you're going to have to take on a bureaucracy that the mayor either won't or can't. That's true when you talk about New York City public housing. It's true when you talk about getting parents more involved in their kids' schools in our school system. It's true when you talk about a jail system that has a crisis of cost and violence. And so there's no question that the structure of the mayor is the public advocate is necessary, because otherwise no one will do it. That's the most important thing. And, you know, the really critical thing for New Yorkers to know is that they're going to be able to trust their public advocate to fight for them, whoever the mayor is. And if you look at the campaign, I do think that some issues have been raised about Councilmember James that raise real concerns.
Well, you know what, we'll get to those in just a minute. But talk a little bit more about your vision for the office. Is the public advocate supposed to be a thorn in the side of the mayor, or are they supposed to also be a partner in government? Is it sort of a grab bag? How should voters try to conceive of the role of the public advocate?
Well, look, and I would like to finish that thought, but I'll first describe the vision. So my plan for the office is all about making sure that you can take on issues no one else is. So I have a plan to get parents more involved in their kids' schools, a plan to make sure that foster kids who are too often left out of the political process and ignored by the political structures aren't anymore. I have a plan to make sure public housing residents who today are discouraged from organizing citywide, who today have to foot the bill for their policing twice because of a terrible agreement made with the city, don't have to do it anymore. The job of the public advocate isn't to be a thorn in the side of the mayor just to be a thorn. The job of the public advocate is to take on issues for the people who desperately need it and don't have anyone else.
But in two of those cases, I mean, there's a whole army of parent advocates that are out there. Some are paid by nonprofits, some are paid by the city. There are a whole bunch of tenant leaders. Again, some are paid by nonprofits, some are paid by the city. To the extent that a public advocate would step in and try and work with or organize those people, inevitably you're going to have a clash with City Hall, right?
Inevitably. On many issues you will. And what I found in my career is that when you take on those issues in ways that are strong and clear and productive, you can get real results. You know, after Sandy, there were real gaps in the city's plan, in the Bloomberg administration's plan, that were made clear. I took on City Hall, I went there, I got life-saving blankets and food. We filled in the gaps in that process. We were able to stand up to City Hall, and we were able to deliver results that made a difference for people who desperately needed it.
So, same question.
So, you know, the Office of Public Advocate has checks and balances on the mayor of the city of New York. When the mayor wanted to extend nanny state, when he imposed a soda ban in the city of New York, recognizing that there was an obesity problem in the city of New York, I also recognized that in our public schools, we do not have physical education. And so clearly, you know, I took that issue on and I challenged the administration. It's not really about what the vision for the office, obviously, is clear, but the question is, what have you done? Have you challenged the existing administration? I challenged him on term limits. I challenged him on the soda ban. I challenged him on the absence of affordable housing, the fact that there is a crisis in the city of New York and countless number of New Yorkers, unfortunately, are being squeezed out of communities. I've challenged him on economic development policies in the city of New York, which do not pay individuals a living wage. I challenged him and with the city council in passing sick leave in the city council. On a number of issues, I have stood up against powerful interests in the city of New York and will do that as the next public advocate of the city of New York.
I'd like to just say something about that, because it's really just not true in many ways. Councilmember James has voted with Mike Bloomberg 159 times in the city council, 98% of the time, has agreed with Mayor Bloomberg's bills. And you talk about the soda ban at the same time that Councilmember James was out there on the soda ban. She was taking corporate contributions, corporate PAC contributions from Coca-Cola, who was deeply vested. And I think that raises a real concern. You know, the public advocate has to be independent. I've never taken contributions from corporations or political action committees. I'm not doing it now. I'm the only candidate who doesn't. And I think that that is one of the most important things for a job that, you know, could claim to take on anything, but really must be trusted to take on those things that no one else is.
So, listen, I know this is a political season, and I know that the attacks are going to come. But no one has ever questioned my integrity. No one has ever questioned my standards, my high standards in city government. For 20 years, I've served the interest of constituents all throughout the city of New York as a former public defender representing countless number of low-income children who were in the criminal justice system and victims of domestic violence, as an assistant attorney general suing an individual who preyed upon immigrants and low-income people in the city of New York, businesses who engaged in deceptive health service clinics against women who only wanted reproductive rights in the city of New York. I stood up for the LGBT community in the city council and was the first person of color to do that. All throughout my career, I have maintained high standards and have never betrayed the trust of my constituents and would never do it because I take the role of government very serious. And I recognize that the role of government, it has transformed my life. And that's the reason why I stand here before you today and am vying for the office of public advocate of the city of New York.
It sounds like you already wanted to get into this, but it is time for the cross-examination. That's where we allow each candidate to ask a question of, sure. of their opponent. Letitia James goes first.
So my question is to Dan Squadron is, you know, I fought Mayor Bloomberg when he extended the third term, what I would argue illegally. I fought him tooth and nail. I fought him. In fact, I brought the case with Bill de Blasio all the way to the Supreme Court. And when Mayor Bloomberg was on the ballot, I endorsed and campaigned with the Democratic nominee. It was Bill Thompson. I supported him then and campaigned day and night for him to win as mayor of the city of New York. Dan, you were silent on term limits. Dan, you did not endorse Bill Thompson, the Democratic nominee. Dan, I recognize that you were a close ally of Mayor Bloomberg. In fact, you used to work for Mayor Bloomberg in the Department of Education. Dan, you were silent then. And you did not endorse the Democratic nominee Bill Thompson for mayor back in 2008. Why were you silent, and why did you not support the Democratic nominee?
Well, look, the question simply isn't true in many ways, just as it's not true to suggest that I have that the attacks didn't start long ago from your campaign or early on, Councilmember. The truth is I did speak out against term limits. It's on the record. It was published at the time. The truth is that I have stood up to Mayor Bloomberg and won when it comes to homeless policy, when it comes to the fingerprinting of food stamp applicants. We've won when it came to Sandy, which I talked about before. We were successful. The truth is, Councilmember James has stood with Mayor Bloomberg 98% of the time, and that's not right.
On the political question that she asked, you did not endorse in the general
election
4 years ago?
I didn't endorse. I had just been elected, and I was really focused on getting things done in the Senate, things like passing a bill to get $75 million a year for public housing when it was going bankrupt.
Your turn to ask a question.
Thank you. Councilmember James,
yes.
The most important thing in a public advocate is that New Yorkers can trust them to be independent. For years, you hid from your constituents that you were a landlord. For years, you failed to disclose your rental income. You have not disclosed your taxes. You're the only citywide candidate who has failed to do that, despite pledging in an earlier debate to do exactly that. In an office that's all about transparency, that's all about making sure New Yorkers can trust you, don't you think that those issues should raise real doubts about New Yorkers' ability to trust you as public advocate?
So, Dan, as you know, I was advised that for my rental income, it's two tenants who live with me in a brownstone, that you did not have to disclose rental income, that it was primarily income which conflicted with your position as a public official. When I discovered that, in fact, I was wrong and that the individual who advised me was incorrect, I amended all of my disclosure forms, and you should know that because you have sought to get copies of each and every one of them. In addition to that, Dan, as you know, I have challenged this administration over and over again. The record is clear. Letitia James is a fighter on behalf of those individuals whose voices have been ignored. I've done it for 20 years as a public servant, and I recognize that you are a close ally of Mayor Bloomberg, someone who was endorsed by Mayor Bloomberg, someone who once worked for Mayor Bloomberg, someone who carried the water of Mayor Bloomberg in Albany. And so, Dan, clearly, to charge me with Mayor Bloomberg's agenda is actually laughable. Everyone knows my record as being an independent voice on behalf of those who have been ignored by this administration, and I would release my tax returns to you and to anyone else. Well, but thank you for the question.
Well, will you do that tomorrow? Because 30 days ago we had a debate and you said you would release your taxes. There are 7 days to go in this campaign. Will you pledge right here that you will release your tax returns tomorrow morning?
Yes, Dan, I will release my tax returns, just as I hope that you would release the fact that you have a trust fund. I mean, you have lived on a trust fund for a very long time. Dan, I have no problems releasing my tax return. I am humbled to be here, humbled to be a candidate for public advocate, someone who came from humble beginnings.
I'm sorry, whose
mother scrubbed floors and whose father was a janitor, and now I stand before you as a
candidate
for New York City public advocate.
Sorry, something was said that really isn't true, Errol, and this is critically important. And it was a personal attack. It was innuendo about myself and my family. And it's been going on the entire campaign. And you know what? That kind of personal attack and innuendo, in addition to simply being untrue, is deeply inappropriate. This is not what this campaign is about. When we talk about the fact that Councilmember James failed to tell her constituents she was a landlord, we talk about the fact that Councilmember James hid her rental income. Talk about the fact that Councilmember James is the only citywide candidate who hasn't released her taxes after pledging to do so. That goes to core issues of transparency that good government groups, the New York Times editorial page, and others consider to be a standard for anyone running for any public office, much less a public office, that's all about trying to create a government that people can more trust.
I think we all get the point. And just to wrap up this section, you're saying because several candidates have talked about you and the trust fund. You're saying that not true, no trust fund, not a source of income for you?
I don't have a trust fund. That's right. As has been widely reported, my family and I were victims of the Madoff scheme, and we lost everything.
Let me just say this. Transparency in government is obviously paramount and is something that I have lived by all of my life. And I take the fact that I am a public servant and I've never betrayed the trust of my constituents. And let me just go on to say, Dan, that as opposed to personal attacks, what we really should focus on the issues that people care about. The fact is that Mayor Bloomberg's policies have been flawed policies in the past 12 years, the closing of schools, the crisis in affordable housing. 1.7 million individuals are living in poverty. Let's focus on those issues, Dan.
We've got some issues that we want to get to.
You're listening to the Public Advocate runoff debate on WNYC AM and FM.
On which I think you both agree with Bill de Blasio, correct me if I'm wrong, and that is his signature proposal for full-day universal pre-K to be funded in part by a small income tax hike on New Yorkers making $500,000 or more. You both have experience in Albany. Albany, the legislature, would need to approve this plan. So, Mr. Squadron, can you first give us a reason, or give de Blasio supporters a reason to think that this actually could get through Albany when critics say that it's dead on arrival? And is there something that you could do as a former state senator, if you become public advocate, get it through Albany?
I am supportive of it, and I think it makes a great deal of sense. You know, I've fought for issues like early childhood education. As chair of the Senate Social Services Committee, I was able to create at the state level for the first time ever a nurse family partnership, which partners mothers in need with specially trained nurses, changes lives. And getting more funding for education, for early education, for child care, where I've put out an innovative idea to help more parents get more help with child care from the government, we need to be very aggressive. Look, the other thing I found is you can get things done that people say are simply impossible. That's how I was able to pass the assault weapons ban into law with the support, obviously, the great leadership of Governor Cuomo. But, you know, even before the tragedy of Newtown, before guns were back in the headlines, I was calling for the legislature to go back and deal with what's really a daily barrage of violence and tragedy in all of our districts. In my district, at the beginning of this year, a 16-year-old was killed because some other kids liked his jacket.
But how do you convert a skeptical state Senate majority, if there is a skeptical state Senate majority, on this one with the tax hike and changing the rules on pre-K?
Well, look, one of the things that I'd love to have is a more progressive leadership in the state Senate so that we could do issues like this. You know, in fact, I sponsor a bill that would deal with one of the consequences of stop and frisk, which is, as it's practiced today, absolutely wrong and unacceptable, the marijuana statutes. And you know what? We couldn't get a vote on it despite pushing like crazy because of the leadership in the state Senate. And that's the kind of transparency and openness we need. And as public advocate, you can do a lot here.
So it's going to be tough. Ms. James, you work for members of the Assembly, so you also have connections in Albany. Do you have any different approach?
Sure. No, I support Bill de Blasio's attempt to get a slight increase for early childhood education. As you know, we were successful in the city council working with Councilmember Annabelle Palma in restoring child care in the city of New York, and it's been a signature issue as a member of the city council. Early childhood education is really the key to success and the key to overcome all barriers. In addition to that, as you know, as chair of contracts, I uncovered the biggest scandal in the city of New York known as City Time, the outsourcing of a contract for municipal employees, where I held a hearing. In fact, I held three hearings and recovered $500 million to restore child care slots, to restore municipal services in the city of New York, to keep open firehouses and keep open senior centers. And so as the next public advocate, you have the authority to issue audits on all city agencies. And I already have a stack of contracts that I would love to investigate as the next public advocate of the city of New York, continuing in that vein to make sure that government is transparent and accountable to New Yorkers.
You don't have the secret tool to pry open the legislature on pre-K and taxes.
No, I don't think anyone does, but I know that there is a lot of fraud, and I think there's a lot of abuse and waste in government, and what we really need is a public advocate who has uncovered City Time and will continue to uncover a lot of waste and fraud and abuse in the city of New York and restore child care in the city of New York for children full day.
Yeah. Okay. It has been reported that holding next week's runoff for a public advocate will cost the city $13 million just to conduct the election, which is more than the entire four-year budget of the office. In the future, do you think it would make sense for New Yorkers to have instant runoffs for public advocate in which voters would choose candidates in order of preference so that after voting once, we would know the outcome without asking voters to come back more than once?
So, Errol, I've heard this question all over the city of New York and all five boroughs, and they're absolutely right. $13 million. $13 million, we can hire 100 teachers. We can open up child care slots. We can keep our firehouses open. We can hire more police. We can focus on infrastructure, creating jobs in the city of New York. I am a co-sponsor of instant runoff in the city council. Because of not much can be done in Albany, the reality is the city council will step up to the plate and reform the system. I believe that there should be a runoff only in the case of the mayor of the city of New York. And it's unfortunate that I came short of 3 points of winning the office of public advocate. And it's unfortunate that we have to spend $13 million, but the law mandates that we have a runoff in the city of New York. You know, I hope that the city council will take up this bill and we will hold hearings.
Well, I couldn't disagree more that it's impossible and we need to give up on getting important legislation passed. I was able to write and pass ethics reform legislation into law, and I'm proud of that. It's been part of my push for transparency, both personal transparency and releasing my own tax returns and being very careful with my disclosure statements and broader transparency in government. The truth is we should have instant runoff elections, and I co-sponsor them in the state. But it's also true that this office has a critical role to play. And the idea that this is not an important election is one that I really reject. You know, October 1st, we're going to be asking people to vote really a third time this year, September 10th, October 1st, first week of November. It's a lot to ask of people who are busy, who have lives to lead. But I really do hope that as many people as possible participate. The more people who participate, the better our government is. And especially for an office that is really all about making sure that we have a more effective government for those folks who normally don't get the results they need.
Right.
And Mr. Squadron, you get the first answer on this next one. This is an important office in a number of ways, and one of them is that the public advocate is next in line to become mayor should anything happen to the mayor. Also, two of the only three public advocates have actually wound up as the Democratic nominee for mayor. So do you have aspirations to become mayor of New York City someday? And what would you be doing to prepare yourself to be mayor on January 2nd should something happen to the next mayor-elect?
Look, I have aspirations to be successful on October 1st and then really build this office into the role that I talk about. A place that people go when after they call 311, they have nowhere else to go. A place that those who are left behind as the new healthcare exchanges come in have somewhere to go. You know, I wake up every morning thinking about the city that I love and that I was raised in, how to make it better, especially for those folks who are left out of it. And that's a big job, and it's a big job to do as public advocate. Look, I'm really proud that in their endorsement of me, the New York Times said that I had the temperament and experience to step in for the temporary period if something did happen to the mayor. And that is an important role for folks to think about, and it's another reason that the ability to trust your public advocate is such an important one. Look, I would work closely with the existing administration, with the governor, with the U.S. senators, and make sure that during a period when there's a special election, New Yorkers knew that they could trust their government was in good hands, and they knew exactly what was happening every step of the way.
Ms. James, might you use this office as a springboard, and how would you prepare just in case you need to step in?
So first, I'm glad that I've been endorsed by Emily's List and the National Organization of Women in Planned Parenthood and the League of Conservation Voters and most of the labor organizations in the city of New York representing everyday New Yorkers whose voices have not been heard in 10 years, in 12 years under this administration. And I've been a fighter against the flawed policies of Mayor Bloomberg time and time again, and the record is clear. And in the district that I represent, as you know, we suffered a major tragedy, the assassination of James Davis. My district mourned, my district healed, and I moved my district forward. And so if anything should happen, God forbid, to the mayor of the city of New York, I am prepared to make the transition. But I am not interested in running for mayor by no means. I'm interested in being the most effective public advocate in the city of New York, using the tool of social justice, hiring a significant number of attorneys to talk about impact cases in the city of New York, standing up on behalf of those voices who have been ignored for far too long, igniting civic engagement in the city of New York, which has been lost. And that's why, unfortunately, as a result of the cynicism that so many New Yorkers experience, which is why only 800,000 individuals came out to vote and only 475 for the Office of Public Advocate, I want them to know that government can be a tool to transform their lives, just as government was a tool to transform
and
my life.
Just to be clear, were you ruling out a future run for mayor?
I am not interested in running for the mayor of the city of New York. I will serve as the public advocate standing up on behalf of New Yorkers whose voices have been ignored for far too long, fighting for affordable housing and child care, fighting for living wages and jobs that can sustain the middle class, fighting for a significant number of issues that unfortunately have not been taken up by this administration, not appealing to the elite and the rich and the well-connected, but appealing to everyday New Yorkers.
Well, look, I think there was a whole lot in there that wasn't entirely true. You talked about transparency. We've talked about transparency, about hiding the fact that Councilmember James is a landlord, her rental income, and her taxes. But, you know, I also think that this is an important distinction. I don't take corporate or political action committee contributions. And that means that folks never need to wonder when I take a position whether I've taken it because of the corporate PAC who has given me a contribution. And I think that is critical. And I also, Councilmember James said, look at the record. And I think that's an important piece to discuss. If you've always stood up to Mayor Bloomberg, why did you vote with Mayor Bloomberg 98% of the time? The truth is, I've stood up to Mayor Bloomberg successfully on homeless policy. In fact, on Brooklyn Bridge Park, I stood up to Mayor Bloomberg. We had a plan for Brooklyn Bridge Park that I didn't agree with. I was able to change that plan and push the park forward. We have a park that the kind of park we have on the Brooklyn waterfront today, the kind of park that parents from across the city are using because of the work that I did successfully standing up to this administration.
Response?
Sure. So, Dan, as you know, you betrayed the trust of your constituents. You told them during the campaign that you would not build housing in Brooklyn Bridge Park. And then Mayor Bloomberg, after endorsing you, You cut a deal with Mayor Bloomberg. And at a time when New Yorkers are being displaced, at a time when there's a crisis in affordable housing, what did you do? You built luxury housing in Brooklyn when countless number of people can no longer afford to live in the city of New York.
That's a new charge I'm going to let you respond
to. Look, it's simply not true. And it really raises a question as to whether voters can trust Councilmember James in the Office of Public Advocate. What's true is there was a plan for Brooklyn Bridge Park that included building housing at the moment I was elected. I said, I don't like that plan, and I'm going to do something about it. I didn't just hold press conferences. What I did is I got involved. I got in the middle of that plan, and I said, we desperately need Brooklyn Bridge Park to be built, but we also need to reduce and delay housing. I was successful in reducing and delaying housing. Right. You know, the idea that was put out there that somehow this is a plan that came after I was elected is put out there just to mislead voters.
All right.
The idea that that I have done anything other than move Brooklyn Bridge Park forward is deeply misleading,
and
it's a real concern.
Go on to the next round. Errol.
Okay, we'll start with you, Mr. Squadron. Among
you're listening to the Public Advocate runoff debate on WNYC AM and FM.
Who are concerned that too much space and other resources are going to charter schools?
Look, I think our major focus in the city needs to be on educating every single student. That's 1.1 million school kids, the vast majority of whom are in traditional public schools. That's what I fought for when I successfully fought for funding for public education. It's what I fought for when I fought for a stronger voice for parents. When I worked with parents in my district who didn't have a good middle school, we were able to successfully create a middle school, which means hundreds of parents who didn't have an option that was comfortable for them or that they were sure of now do. Not just from the elementary school, but also from a much broader neighborhood. I have a plan that focuses on special education students who are so often ignored in the system. My plan for the Public Advocate's Office deals with discipline in the schools, where too often there's a pathway from classrooms to prisons. My plan deals with trying to give parents a stronger voice in their children's education.
Well, talk specifically, though, about charters and co-locations. I mean, this has been really kind of where that issue has gotten a lot of attention. And, you know, I mean, frankly, this question came from viewers. They said, look, it looks like he's getting money from people who are charter operators, who are active in the movement. Where does he stand on charters, and what's going to happen if he, as a major public voice, is going to be weighing in on co-locations and other issues?
Now, look, there are some that are working for parents and students, and that's a good thing. But the truth is, I've seen in my district co-locations that don't make sense, where the traditional public school that was already in the building was going to be adversely affected. And I stood up and stopped and changed those co-locations. And that's what I would continue to do. You know, the truth is, we've seen too often that the new school coming in seems to be treated as the school at the front of the line. That's absolutely wrong. We've also seen, I believe, not enough focus on making the system better for all 1.1 million school kids. You know, the achievement gap in the city is the shame of the city. The fact that if you're a child with special needs or who doesn't speak English in your home, you're more likely not to graduate from high school than to graduate. That is the shame of the city. As public advocate, I'm going to take on those issues. I'm going to partner with parents. I'm going to stand up to an education bureaucracy that too often says to parents, we don't want you involved. You know, my wife and I are raising our 2.5-year-old son, and he's going to be going to public schools. If we're told that we have no voice in his education, we're going to pull our hair out. That's not okay. That has to change for all New Yorkers.
Spoken like a parent.
So I'm a proud graduate of public school. And so you were right. My opponent, Dan Squadron, has taken over $100,000 from charter school operators in the city of New York. And in fact, he carried the mayor's water in Albany. He was the first one of the Democrats to vote in support of mayoral control, to lift the cap on charter schools in the city of New York. And he really has been missing in action as it relates to co-locations in his district. And as someone who has challenged this mayor on the closing of schools, someone who recognizes that teaching to the test has not worked, someone who recognizes that there is an achievement gap that we have to focus on, that there is not physical education or arts and culture in our school, the 12 years of Bloomberg administration, his flawed policies, we have to get past. And what we do not need is a candidate for someone who is going to be the public advocate of the city of New York, who's going to continue the Bloomberg agenda in the city of New York. What we need is change, and I present change in the city of New York, a voice who has stood up on behalf of those who have been ignored. And as the public advocate of the city of New York. I would love to create a parental empowerment and engagement. I would love to be a public advocate on the ground, organizing individuals so that their voices are heard as it relates to public education in the city of New York and who respects teachers and the professionals that they are.
Well, look, that's just absolutely not true. What's true is that I've stood up against co-locations that don't make sense. I've partnered with parents in my district to create new schools. I've rolled up my sleeves and fought for more education funding successfully. I've gotten engaged in this issue, taken on fights, and been successful with them, trying to push forward education and the progressive values and opportunity that it provides. You know, it's really so important that attacks, especially unfounded attacks, don't drive a campaign like this. You know, the ability to trust what a public advocate or any public official says is so important. You know, the public advocate could take on, claim to take on any issue they want and not actually get anything done on it. You need to know that your public advocate, when they take on a fight, is going to follow it through to its conclusion, is going to get a result that makes a difference in people's lives. You know, asserting something that isn't true doesn't make anyone's life better in the city. It doesn't make a city that's easier to make a life in for people who are really struggling. It doesn't deal with the affordability crisis or the achievement gap. It doesn't deal with the homelessness crisis, more homeless people than we've ever had in the history of the city. It doesn't deal with 500,000 New Yorkers in public housing who have to wait so long for housing repairs that the landlord would be fined into oblivion if it was the private housing market.
And that's why it was so important that we build affordable housing in Brooklyn Bridge Park, and my opponent only built luxury housing.
Okay.
I urge
everyone.
Repeating something that isn't true will never make it true.
You've given a whole tribe of reporters more than enough to look at.
Thank you.
The fact-checking is going on as we speak. I'm sure we'll all hear about it on Twitter before the night is over. But right now we're going to move on to the lightning round. That's where Brian and I will ask the candidates a series of questions where the candidate will only be able to give a brief answer, usually just yes or no to each question. Take it away.
All right. Ms. James, do you support congestion pricing?
Yes.
Mr. Squadron?
Yes.
Do you support an extension of casino gambling in New York State as is on the ballot this fall, Mr. Squadron?
Yes.
Do you, Ms.
Yes.
James? Do you give out candy on Halloween, Ms. James?
Candy on Halloween, serve cookies during on primary day.
Do you?
I do, and they're called Squadra bars.
Have you ever been arrested? Something else for the reporters to follow up on. What's in a Squadra bar? Have you ever been arrested as part of a political demonstration?
No.
Have
no.
you? Should the public advocate have a driver, Ms. James?
No. I like to drive myself, or more importantly, take the subway.
Mr. Squadra?
It's certainly not necessary, no.
Should medical marijuana, Mr. Squadron, be legalized in New York?
Yes.
Ms. James?
Yes.
Okay. picking up right there, first for you, Ms. James, have you ever tried marijuana recreationally?
No, because I recognize the, unfortunately, the dangers of drugs that, unfortunately, have had an adverse impact on the city of New York.
Mr. Squadron?
I have.
Really?
Mr. Squadron, what is... learn something new, right? What's the last book you read?
A book called Justice by, and I'm trying to remember, by Michael Sandel.
Oh, yeah.
Simple Justice, on the story of the Civil Rights Movement and Thurgood Marshall.
Okay. Ms. James, what was your favorite band growing up?
The Jackson 5. I fell in love with Jermaine.
The tall one.
The Beastie Boys.
The Beastie Boys. Senator, should Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver step down?
No.
Yes.
Ms. James, what is your favorite city to visit outside of New York?
I like Atlanta, Georgia.
Senator.
Can I answer New York?
Outside of New York City.
And I like Portland, Maine.
There you go. Senator Squadron, what city noise would you try to reduce if you could do so as public advocate?
Oh, that's a great question. You know, there's...
hear the noise.
Street construction, if it were possible.
The same street construction.
Okay. Ms. James, have you ever traveled to Cuba?
No.
No.
Senator, should bridges, roads, and other public spaces ever be named after someone who is still alive?
I'm sure sometime, yes.
I voted against the Ed Koch bill.
As a general proposition, though. Not just
as a general proposition, it all depends upon the circumstances, but in all likelihood, no.
Okay. And Ms. James, has the letter grading system for restaurants been a success?
Speaking to small businesses, they have a number of concerns with regards to the lettering system in the city of New York. So I would say the jury is out on that, but no.
I think we're better off with it than not. There's been a whole lot of other problems with the war on small businesses that has to be dealt with.
Okay. Thank you. Brian and I will now ask the candidates questions for the remainder of the debate until it is time for closing statements. Brian.
Thanks, Earl. Ms. James, there's been so much focus on stop and frisk in the races this campaign season and how people would dial it back.
Yeah.
So I wonder if you also, as public advocate, would have a public safety agenda to reduce crime further than the last administrations have already cut it back.
Yes. So I was happy to vote to override the mayor's veto on the Community Safety Act to reform stop and frisk and to ban racial profiling in the city of New York. But moving forward, I've worked with Commissioner Kelly for surveillance cameras. That was the first initiative when I came to the city council. And now city council members are in a position to provide discretionary dollars for surveillance cameras in the city of New York. And Commissioner Kelly gives me credit. In addition to that, community policing is absolutely critically important in the city of New York. And in addition to that, I would also focus on gangs. And I'm glad that the mayor now recognizes and the police commissioner recognizes that it's really critically important that we can have safety without violating the rights of individuals, and that the focus really should be on gangs and being embedded with gangs and focusing on their activity on the internet. It is critically important in the city of New York.
Mr. Squadron, same thing. A positive crime reduction agenda, not just dialing back stop and frisk?
Look, and a big part of this, yes, and a big part of this is about guns. You know, I have been fighting to get illegal guns off our streets for my entire career in the Senate. I wrote the state assault weapons ban. I've been pushed micro-stamping of guns, which would make it easier to get illegal guns off the street. I've called for special legislative action to deal with the scourge of gun violence. I've seen too many kids in my district and across the city who are killed by gun violence. You know, the truth is, across the city, communities are dealing with this issue. And some of the things they're doing, some of their initiatives, are really making sense. An anti-violence initiative in my district on the Lower East Side at a place called Campos Plaza that was and still is in many ways beset by gun violence has had a real effect. One of the things the public advocate has to do is partner with communities and individuals that have good ideas and figure out how to give them a citywide pressure and platform to make them reality. And that's one of the things that I would do as public advocate.
So with so much criticism of stop and frisk, are there policies of Commissioner Ray Kelly that you particularly like and would like to do more of?
Look, I think that when you look at some of the counterterrorism, with the major exception of the surveillance of the Muslim community, which I have serious concerns about, but the focus on having something in the city, I think that that is the right idea, although, again, in the case of Muslim surveillance, I strongly disagree with what they've done.
Something in the city, a particular anti-terrorism program that you do like? Because that's the one that gets all the press. Mm.
Look, I think that overall, if you look at the way in which they've been able to focus resources in a way that creates a real presence, I think that's been effective.
Ms. James, same question.
So the issue of the surveillance of the Muslim community is unconstitutional and illegal, and really the NYPD really should cease and desist and do it in accordance with the law and the Constitution. In addition to that, let me also say that I've attended, unfortunately, more funerals than I can remember as a member of the city council, and all throughout my career. There's nothing worse than holding a grandmother or a mother before a casket of a child. And so with technology, I'm hoping that we can get at gun violence in the city of New York, and I'm hoping that Congress will pass a comprehensive bill to address gun violence in the city of New York, because really the answer really lies in Congress, and it's unfortunate that our government has been hijacked by extremists. And so clearly working with NYPD Police Commissioner Kelly, as I have done from time to time, notwithstanding the fact that I have been critical of some of his policies, going forward, it's really critically important that we empower individuals, that we give resources to those organizations on the ground that have done a great job, like, for instance, Fathers Who Have Stood Up in the Hood, as they are known. Individuals, organizations in East New York have done a great job, and in Southeast Queens that have done a wonderful job basically trying to avoid violence in the city of New York. There are fact, they intercept violence. And the city council, we have provided them over $1 million so that they can be on the ground, hire individuals, talk to individuals, and try to resolve conflicts before they erupt in violence.
And a specific Kelly policy that you have liked, real quick?
The policy, community policing in the city of New York. I have worked with Police Commissioner Kelly on community policing, okay. And particularly in and around hotspots in my community, we have reduced crime, and we have worked together in respect to reducing crime.
Thank you, Al.
Okay. Both of you have claimed tonight and throughout the campaign that you're going to make energetic use of the ombudsman function of
yes.
the office, which is the ability to help New Yorkers resolve complaints about government and other problems. Describe one instance of constituent service that you've provided in the past that you think showcases your ability to do a good job in this area. We'll start with you, Senator.
There was a woman in my district, a public housing resident, who was a victim of domestic violence. And it created enormous, obviously, instability in the home and risk. And as a result, she fell behind in rent payments to NYCHA, the New York City Public Housing, to the point that her kids were taken away by the Administration for Children's Services. And she risked not just losing her home, but her entire family. And it really all stemmed from being the victim of domestic violence. This is an issue I've taken on in the state Senate. I passed a bill to crack down on repeat domestic violence offenders. But we were also able to help this woman to make sure that she was given a chance to stay in her apartment, to make up the back payments, and to get her kids back. And, that's one example of what I've really tried to do, which is listen to my constituents, always be fighting for them. Make sure that individuals and groups know that if they come to me and they have an issue and no one else is standing up for them, I will.
The constituent service in my office, there's just so many cases that I can cite. But let me just really talk about the endorsement that I received from Tenants PAC, where several years ago and even up until most recently, I've taken on landlords who have harassed tenants. Particularly in my district, which is ground zero for displacement and the displacement of individuals who can no longer afford to live in the city of New York. Landlords who have harassed individuals who are rent-controlled, rent-stabilized tenants and replaced them with market-rate tenants. Most recently, I have filed a litigation. I've organized tenants in a building at 300 Clinton Avenue who were not receiving needed repairs. I passed a bill in the city council where tenants can get repairs in the city of New York. I was a co-sponsor of a bill that would ban harassment of tenants in the city of New York. I have pro bono legal service in my office offering immigrants free legal services. I have lawyers who represent countless number of tenants who are going to court pro bono. I've resolved countless number of complaints, not only my staff, but me, myself, because not only am I an attorney, but I also serve as a social worker from time to time. And the most important thing that elected officials can do is provide constituent service to their community so that you can be on the ground and resolve issues when they have nowhere else to go. And as the next public advocate, we will have attorneys and we will have social workers on staff to resolve constituents on behalf of all New Yorkers in the city of New York whose voices have been ignored.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Public Advocate Runoff Debate on WNYC AM and FM.
What legislation, for you as a member of City Council, you've been most proud of introducing and getting passed? And since the Public Advocate has the power to introduce legislation into the City Council, what legislation might you introduce in 2014?
So most people don't realize that the public advocate has a legislative role. You can introduce legislation. You can hold hearings all throughout the city of New York, similar to the hearings that I held after the snowstorm in the city of New York. And you preside over the city council if you so choose. I guess I am most proud of the fact that I pass the Tenant Safety Act in the city of New York, where individuals can get repairs from the roof to the cellar in a speedy and expeditious fashion in the city of New York. A countless number of individuals are living in housing where their conditions are challenging, and they don't know where to go. And clearly, there is a law in place which mandates that repairs have to be completed in a timely fashion. And I'm also was glad that we hired more inspectors, particularly with an HPD, to make sure that those repairs are done in a timely fashion.
And what would you introduce next year as public advocate? Have anything in mind yet?
Right now, I'm looking at affordable housing. Obviously, the affordable housing crisis in the city of New York is something that I really want to focus on. I want to focus on the growing income inequality. As you know, most recently, I led a rally on behalf of fast food workers in the city of New York, and it's really critically important that we change our economic development policies in the city of New York.
What would the bill say?
So the bill basically would say the following, that if, in fact, we provide any developer any resources in the city of New York, that we would have to pay individuals a living wage in the city of New York. I think that's really critically important. The living wage bill that we passed in the city of New York only captured a small audience, and I really want to expand the living wage bill in the city of New York. And in addition to that, if any landlord gets any subsidies in the city of New York, they would have to remain in the Mitchell-Lamo or in the rent control, rent stabilized program in the city of New York.
All right, Mr. Quadrant, same question. You've been in the state Senate. What legislation are you the most proud of that you actually got passed? And what would you introduce into a new venue, city council, if you're public advocate?
Look, I'm really proud that I passed legislation to get $75 million a year from the federal government to stabilize public housing when it was going bankrupt. People had been talking about it for years. The city and the state had disinvested for years before I was in office. I was able to get that done. I'm proud that I passed a bill to make it harder to jack up rents in otherwise affordable apartments. I'm really proud that I was able to get my state assault weapons ban passed into law. I talked about the domestic violence bill before. I'm proud of that. You know, I have always tried to focus on and pass bills that are really needed that others thought weren't possible to get passed. As public advocate, I would introduce a bill on making community education councils, the parent groups for public schools, stronger and partnering them with a public advocate. I would introduce legislation to require a living wage for employees of large corporations like Walmart and fast food restaurants who today are forced into poverty. But, you know, I also want to say about what Councilmember James was talking about. You know, Councilmember James talks about taking on bad landlords, but she also took thousands of dollars from one of the worst landlords in the city, Josh Gutman. Councilmember James talks about dealing with development projects differently. Councilmember James also has taken contributions on development projects that are before her in the city council. And, you know, I really think that it raises a concern about whether, as public advocate, Councilmember James would be willing to take these fights on.
Well, the question was about what legislation you would introduce, but now you get a chance to respond since you were attacked.
Sure. Listen, no one has questioned my integrity, but I recognize that we are in a political season, and no, so the attacks will come. And clearly, my record is clear. I've taken on powerful interests and powerful developers in the city of New York. Everyone knows my record in the city council, and any contribution that I receive is not going to change my policy one iota, not one bit. I've stood up to the most powerful interests when most politicians hid in the city of New York. I stood up against an individual who wanted to build and change the character of a community in downtown Brooklyn when Dan was nowhere around. And the reality is, Dan, is, as you know, you have accepted $100,000 from charter school operators and $175,000 from individuals who supported the Brooklyn Bridge Park, notwithstanding the fact that you only negotiated luxury housing in the city.
We've gone round and round on this before.
Quick
response since you were attacked, but 15 seconds.
a lot of attacks in there, and none of them true. So the truth is I've only ever taken contributions from individuals, a broad array of individuals from around the city, the vast majority of them small contributions. I have participated in the campaign finance system. I've asked Councilmember James to join me in saying that we shouldn't have any independent expenditures in this race that undermine the campaign finance system. She's refused. And the truth is I am proud of the work I've done on Brooklyn Bridge Park, proud of the work I did to reduce luxury housing, and anyone who likes what Brooklyn Bridge Park is today, I'm really pleased that we were able to force the city to put money into it, to get more amenities, so that we could have this great Brooklyn Bridge Park.
Okay.
You know, Councilmember James and I differ on this. Councilmember James would prefer that we have no park there, and I think that would be a huge mistake for the borough and the city.
As public advocate, you'd appoint a member of the City Planning Commission, and I'm going to ask for these to be short answers.
Sure.
What would be your marching orders to that appointee? What would be their priorities? We'll start with you, Senator.
Look, to ensure two things. One is that you have a real community-driven process for projects that come before the City Planning Commission. Among my plan to make this office a more effective force for people who need it, for tenants and residents across the city, is having what I call a new neighborhood organizer. someone who partners with local communities, community boards, elected officials, to try to figure out what sorts of changes the community wants to drive forward. This is what I was able to do on the Lower East Side in partnering with a broad array to come to an agreement after 42 years on a project that had been stalled. 500 units of permanently affordable housing are now going to go up on the Lower East Side along with some other housing and retail. No one is protesting. No one is filing a lawsuit because it was driven by the community. The second is the major issue for the city over the next 10 years is affordability. Now, affordability means parents being able to have a school that they can send their kids to that's going to give them a chance. It means buses and trains and subways that work so that you have a commute that lets you spend some time at home. And it also means more affordable housing. Once upon a time, we did things like build Mitchell Llama and expand rent regulation. Today, the opposite is happening, and that must change.
So let me just say again, he admitted the fact that it's only luxury housing in Brooklyn Bridge Park, one. Two, let me also go on to say that the independent expenditure relates to all of the union support that I have received from 1199, from 32BJ, unlike my opponent. And this is consistent with Citizens Union of the City of New York. We are both in campaign finance, and most of my contributions have come from working people in the City of New York. And labor unions, I will not deny labor unions speaking on behalf of working people in the City of New York. And I'm proud to have received the endorsement of quite a few labor organizations in the City of New York, and this is nothing more than a political gimmick, and I recognize that. But also, you know, but also I do not represent the Bloomberg administration. I will not continue the Bloomberg era. I do not represent the interests of the rich and the well-connected, and that's why the labor organizations have endorsed my candidacy. And in regards to your question, Errol, what we need is more affordable housing in the City of New York, and you had an opportunity to build some affordable housing in that wonderful park. But in fact, you only built luxury housing. And my record is clear. Whenever any developer walks through my door, the first thing that I demand is affordable housing, or I show them the door.
Look, there's a lot to say. Councilmember James knows full well what was happening in Brooklyn Bridge Park. Councilmember James knows that she's taken contributions from developers while looking at their projects. Councilmember James is a landlord herself and has not disclosed her rental income.
Okay, it is time for closing statements. We're going to start with Letitia James. You go first.
12 years of Mayor Bloomberg, flawed policies, growing income inequality, 1.7 million individuals living in poverty, 52,000 individuals tonight will go to sleep homeless, one-third of them children. We need to move past the Bloomberg administration, and we need to really focus on working people in the City of New York whose voices have not been at the table of these 12 years. I have stood up to powerful interests and stood up to Mayor Bloomberg time and time again. My record is clear. As someone who challenged the mayor and reformed Stop and Frisk in the City of New York and who voted to ban racial profiling, as someone who has developed more affordable housing in my district, as someone who has fought the mayor on child care, someone who has stood up to deceptive individuals who would deny women the right to choose in the City of New York, and as someone who has fought the mayor on the closing of schools, classroom size, the achievement gap in the City of New York, and co-locations where parents have not had a voice. I want to give New Yorkers a voice in the City of New York. My record is clear, and I would love to be your public advocate representing your family and mine, and I thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Mr. Squadron.
First of all, I want to thank New York One, Errol and Brian, everyone who watched for watching tonight. As I said before, October 1st is a really important election day. It's an opportunity to vote for an office that must be effective for New Yorkers who most need it. I've been a progressive fighter my whole career. I have a 100% rating on choice from Planned Parenthood. I was able to write the state assault weapons ban, gotten $75 million a year for public housing. After Sandy, when the city wasn't prepared, I rolled up my sleeves and made sure that my constituents wouldn't be left behind. Now I have a plan to make this office a more effective force for children, families, seniors, every New Yorker who doesn't get enough out of City Hall. That's what this is about. We need to have a public advocate that New Yorkers can trust to fight for them, to take on fights that no one else is, for communities and individuals who are too often left out and left behind, and get results. I love this city. I've lived here my whole life. And As public advocate, I will make this a city that more people have a better shot at making a life in. Thank
you. Okay. Thanks very much, candidates. That's all the time we have for this debate. I'd like to thank the candidates for joining us. And here's a reminder. The date for the runoff is next Tuesday, October 1st, and the general election falls on November 5th. The voter registration deadline, if you want to vote in the general election, is October 11th.